you're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, you'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
You know you'd like to be in Hawaii, perhaps even on the island of Maui, but you're not there. So put your tropical shirt on, get your Mai Tai in hand, close your eyes, and listen to this amazing story from Tom Tezak, a 31-year broker in Maui, whose heart is about as big as Texas, even though he lives on Maui, and get some great insights on why we do what we do in real estate. Enjoy this episode. I'll see you on the other side.
So welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Here's where we're going to talk about, you get to tell a story. You've been in real estate for a blue million years, and not Hawaii million years, but I'd love to know, first of all, how long have you been in? It's over 30 years now, right?
31 years, I think it's been. I was licensed when I was 21, gave up my license because I was, you know, a kid, and it's like I didn't have the experience to be a realtor and to have somebody trust me with all the money in the world for them in Joliet, Illinois, which was, you know, that in Joliet where I worked in originally, it was these folks that were buying there were buying with all of their money. Right. And it was a huge investment and they're not going to trust this kid. So I think I made one deal. I sold a big piece of real estate to my dad that we in turn developed years later as me and my brothers, we developed the project. So I was development in my background, which we made, didn't make a lot of money, but we at least got rid of the property, which we couldn't do. But I gave up my license and then I helped my sister. I think it was 10 years, 9 years later, she said, Tommy, I want to sell my house by owner and I want some help. So I went over and I staged her house for her. And it was fun. It's like, well, I need to go back and get my real estate license again because she put it on the market. I think she ended up listing it with a friend of ours. And I said, I need to go get my license.
I could have had that listing.
So I went back and got my license, but I also had a retail store when I was 21 or 22. I opened a retail store, which evolved into a big army surplus store.
Oh,
I was a funeral director. I worked for my dad's company as a funeral director. And in 6 months, both my brothers were doing that. And it's like, man, I was working way more than I liked. I didn't like the job at all. And the pie was really small. When I asked my dad, I said, Dad, I need a raise. I mean, I'm a double major. I've got two college degrees. And he said, you live in the apartment above the funeral home for free for $50 a month. He goes, what do you need more money for? Your brothers have a wife and kids and they need more money. It's like, okay, I get it. That's a fair answer. There's only so much money and the pie is only so big. So 6 months after that, I just said, I opened up a store in this little crappy location that my dad, in a building my dad owned in a bad part of town. And the business exploded. And so in 6 months, I was out of that and running my own business at 22 without ever working behind a retail counter. So that was a journey. And then I was a deputy coroner for 7 years as well. So
why not be the coroner?
Yeah, it was, you know, what the heck? So I ran the Army Surplus Store as a deputy coroner. And then, you know, when I was 29, I think it was, I got my real estate license back and then got married. And I was doing three jobs at the same time, which was real estate, Army Surplus and Deputy Coroner. And then, well, there's a whole lot of stories back there at the Deputy Coroner. I got fired twice
for political reasons. I mean, there's so many questions I want to ask right now, but we can't have a 5-hour episode. But oh my God, I'm so intrigued by this. Because the first thing I have to ask you is, there's a chemical they sell at the Army Navy Surplus store that I can pour into the bamboo that will kill it. Because, you know, it's almost impossible to kill bamboo.
Right.
But I don't know what the name of that chemical is. Do you know what that is?
I don't.
It's something the guys have behind the counter at the one. It's not even in my county. It's like two counties away. I have to go out into the rural area to get it. It will kill bamboo, though. It's probably like Agent Orange or something. It's probably terrible for me.
Yeah, I don't know what that would be. I didn't have that product. That's all kinds of different stuff.
You don't know what you're going to find in there.
We all had all kinds of stuff. I would go to the auctions and it was so much fun and, you know, come home with the craziest stuff. So, but anyway, then I started selling real estate, which was 31 years ago for real. And then in my first year, I was the top agent at my company outside of the broker owner.
Well, I mean, if you can handle dead people in the Army Navy auction, what's real estate? It's no big deal.
Well, you know, it's part of my presentation when I do listing presentations truly is look, I'm a really good communicator. I used to be a deputy coroner telling you that a deal is falling apart is really easy compared to what I used to have to do when I have to notify families. And people would look at me, it's like, no, for real. I mean, your deal falling apart is not that big of a deal.
How much further would all of us get in life if we had a little bit more perspective, Tom? That's like the one thing that's missing with so many people. And it's also why realtors will work 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, over communicating with their sellers, the sellers never giving them a minute's rest because nobody got that reset on perspective.
Yes.
And that maybe that's one of your keys to your high level of success over all these years.
It absolutely is. The perspective on it, I laugh. And so many of the people that I work with, the ancillaries, the escrow staff and advertising people, they send me referrals. It's like, you know, why me? It's because you're the easiest person. You don't get upset. You don't wig out when there's a problem. You just, it's like, let's just figure it out. You know, it's all about perspective. Nobody's dying here, you know, and it's really earned me a lot of business because I don't let things, I mean, I get pissed, I swear, and I holler and all that stuff, but it takes a lot to get me there. And it's usually somebody who's dishonest. And that's the thing that really, an agent, you know, that doesn't do the right thing. And that sends me over the edge because I try to protect our industry. Pardon?
There's no need for it. There's plenty of space out there to succeed without lying.
Yes, that is my journey. And I don't, you know, I hold a real estate grudge against other realtors who do the wrong thing. So
I know. So we still deal with them, but we remember right back here of what we need to be cautious about, because as a fiduciary, you are looking out for your buyer's best interest or your seller's best interest. And if you know the other person has a history, it's not that they might not have changed and they might do things the right way, but it means you're going to watch with an extra eye on it because we have to.
Well, you know, as a broker owner, I run an office meeting every week, and every 3 months, part of our office meeting is we have a segment. It's don't be that agent. And you know, it's like we live in a really small sandbox. I don't know how many agents are in your community or in people, you know, listening.
About 50,000 in mine.
So we have 1,700 in my market.
That's
small. So that means you work with everybody. If they're doing business, you work with everybody for some time or another. And everybody knows who you are. And it's a small community. So, you know, if you're peeing in the sandbox, it doesn't take long for people to figure it out. And so that's why we always train our agents. It's like, don't be that agent. We have a couple agents that are no longer with us because it's like, we don't want you. I don't care how much money you make us. It's not worth it because I don't want that reputation.
Really, it's more along the lines of no matter what happens in your life, eventually the coroner comes.
Eventually the coroner comes. Exactly right.
So in 31 years, you've seen a lot and you could probably tell stories for days besides the fact that I want to talk about your coroner, but we're here to talk about real estate. So I'm
okay.
My own impulse and my lack of a filter, which is my problem most of the time. I'd love to know what you would tell the world about what you've seen in the years that you have conducted professional real estate that you can't believe you saw it. But this goes back to that whole idea that no matter what we land in the middle of, there's always another side to it. So I'd love to know the one story that jumps to your mind.
The one that jumps, and it's just a recent, you know, 30 years, but the most recent experience and story that I had, unfortunately, a friend of mine, he worked for me as a painter, and he just went down the wrong path, unfortunately, as some people do. And it was just really sad. And he had issues with addiction and all kinds of things like that. And he had lost a house and he was in the process of losing another house. And a friend of his, who is a realtor, came to me and she said, look, I can't do this deal because I'm too close. And he knows you and he trusts you.
We got to give a high five to that realtor for finding that space to say, I've got to do something better for my friend, because not everybody has the ability to step away. So had to pause and give a high five there. That's big.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a journey. He had all kinds of, you know, problems that he was trying to work through and I was trying to help him. I became a counselor. I became a realtor. I became a bail bondsman. I became all of these things. And it was the craziest journey to get him through. We had three escrows on this property. It kept falling out. He was a hoarder. He had lots of friends who would come over to the house at all times and trying to get through the finish line. But we ended up selling the house as is, where it is, full of all the stuff that was left. But, you know, the journey for me was he'd lose his phone all the time. I couldn't find him. Every time I wanted to set an appointment, I would have to drive to the house and say, hey, so-and-so, I need to show the house tomorrow. We've got somebody coming over. So the only way I could communicate was to drive 15 minutes to get to the house, to set the appointment, and then the next day or the next afternoon, drive back and hope that it was ready or available or whatever it was. You know, I never had to go through that journey, and I would get so frustrated, but I just kept my eye on the ball, and the ball wasn't the money. I lost so much money in this deal just compared to the time I put in compared to everything else. But he, you know, I had so much compassion for the guy because I was like, oh man, I hope I never get to that space, but I need to help him because right now he's going to lose the house. We're on the courthouse steps. I'm stopping the sale and he's got over $100,000 in equity in the property. And it's just like, I mean, making me cry now just thinking about it because he couldn't do it for himself.
Right.
And so
he couldn't give himself the standard of care that you could give him as a professional. That's something that realtors forget when they're tempted to throw their hands up in a situation. I mean, there's times when realtors should walk away from a bad client, but this is not a bad client. This is the client in dire straits who needs to be cared for because he can't care for himself. But if you had thrown your hands up, Tom, who was going to help him?
Nobody.
And that's what frustrates me so much when we, as humans, we don't take that one step back and say, okay, maybe I need to suck it up so that the other person can get to the other side. We all get to the other side eventually, but get them across the finish line first. And that's what you did here.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a journey of it too. It's just our third contract fell out because of his inability to perform. And the buyer said, I'm out of here. One of the contracts fell. Well, the one fell apart because he didn't perform. The next one fell apart because the neighbor came out. They all didn't like this owner, understandably, because he was a problem neighbor. The one owner comes out, talks to the buyer, tells the buyer some untruthful things. The buyer says, I don't want to do this deal. And then 2 days later, that neighbor writes an offer on the house.
What an ass.
So, you know, and it's just like, and I told their agent, I said, tell that client they will never buy this house. It's not going to happen.
Back from that person.
I was just like, you got to be kidding me. You just did that. So they went away. And then we got another, and it's all happening pretty quick. And I'm dancing with the commissioner. The commissioner is who manages our sales here, foreclosure sales here in Hawaii. And I'm dancing with the commissioner. We had a great relationship. She was super helpful telling me how to do the deal. Cause I don't do short sales. I don't do, you know, foreclosures. That's not my thing, but this is my friend and I'm trying to help him. So we're working through that. And he finds his way to jail. And so I have to go to jail to get the contract signed. So this is the first for me, right? So he signs the contract when he's in jail. So we get everything going. And then he asked me to bail him out. I said, I'm not bailing you out right now because the best thing that can happen for you right now is for you to be there, as weird as that might be. So he stayed in and nobody else would bail him out. And so we feel bad, but I let him stay there for 2 weeks. Because that's the way I was able to get through the transaction because he was his own worst enemy. And then I went and bailed him out right before the sale was closing because I had to get him out so that he could sign documents. I had to go to court with him. And it's the first time I've ever put, you know how you pay for things in a transaction, you submit it to escrow to get paid back. It's the first time in my life I ever put a $2,000 bail and submitted it to escrow to get paid back out of the closing. And, you know, but it all went.
Something you often see on the closing disclosure.
Yeah. So I had to call the closing agent up and we all got to be close to say the least. And the closing agent was amazing. And we were just like, oh, this is a journey. But we do what we have to do. And so I called him up and said, look, there's going to be something on the closing that is going to be like this. And he said, okay. And then he lost his license. Like every week he lost his license. So we're trying to get him signed for the notary and he lost his license. So we had to go back to a different notary who had originally notarized him when he did have a license. We finally got it done. But like I said, I had so many hours into the transaction and then paid a referral out to the agent who was, you know, give her a high five. Oh no, she was smarter than everybody.
We're not going to talk about how she was smart there, but I think the interesting thing in this whole piece is not just that it showcases why there will always be members of the public who need a professional realtor, because what this gentleman's problems were could not have been solved by a hedge fund or by a website, because there was going to be a disconnect there in getting the whole process completed. But if you're a member of the public and you wonder why realtors get paid what they get paid, it's because of scenarios like this. And we don't know from seller to seller and buyer to buyer whether or not this is going to be some very complicated land minefield process, or if it's going to be something that's relatively smooth. But because of the amount of time that we spend, the liability that we carry, it does wind up balancing out over time. But you got to know, Mr. or Mrs. Public, who's listening to this, this is the wild part of real estate. And y'all listen to this thinking, man, I wish I'd gotten a deal like that. And yeah, it sounds good at the end, but in the process, there's a lot of people investing time and energy to get it there. But mainly, don't be the snake if you're the neighbor. That was really bad. That was bad. Karma's going to get them, I feel confident.
Yeah. But you know what? As it turned out, the third deal was the deal where he made the most money of all three deals. You know, and he made $25,000 more taking the third deal than the first deal as we're trying to work through all of this. It was a fascinating, fascinating journey. I don't know that I want to go through it again. You know, it was a really great learning experience. I learned a lot of things. As it turns out, the interesting part of the story is he called me up a couple of weeks ago and he said his father had passed away and he inherited like $30 million. So,
you help him buy a new house now?
Well, probably not.
He could pay cash now though, Tom. I mean, that's a perk.
Yeah. So it's just interesting how people's lives go. And
but the good part is you were there for him at the darkest time when he needed somebody to walk with him and you didn't just cut him loose. You walked with him. And that's a mark of who you are.
Yeah. I never yelled and hollered at a client before, but I did at him. And it was because what I come to find out is the only way I could communicate with him was to be super aggressive. And I would tell him, hey, man, I love you. I'm trying to help you. And he would get it. And he knew. And through the journey, he trusted me because he knew that my interest was his best interest. And that's what it came down to at the end of the day.
So. Which is the hallmark of a truly professional realtor is that the genuine caring in your nature is something you can't hide. And the public knows. And you get rewarded for that over the long haul. Sometimes from moment to moment doesn't happen. But in the long haul, everything works out.
I agree. It is a good path. If you do, you know, my dad always taught me, he says, you know, you do the right thing and the money will follow. Don't ever worry about the money. Just worry about taking care of your customers and
which is also a common thread amongst professional realtors who survive a long time. They have that absolute same mindset. And if you're a young realtor listening to this, the sooner you move yourself into that place of servant leadership of, if I just do things the right way, the money will figure itself out. Just listen to me, listen to Tom. It does. Sometimes it takes a minute, but it does.
Yeah, it's so true. I know I've got a young gentleman who's been working with me for 6 years, and it makes me feel so good when he comes to me. He goes, they're doing the wrong thing, and that's not okay. It's like, yes.
Yeah, bud.
I love it. That's great the best. Of anything anybody can take away, that's the best thing. I agree with you. So
speaking of takeaways, Tom, if somebody needs an amazing realtor professional on Maui, and they would like to know how to buy a second home or resort property or make that their permanent residence, I know you've got all the answers. So how can they find you if they want that information?
Absolutely. They can just search Tom Tezak online or call me 808-280-2055 or tom@tomtezak.com. It's pretty simple.
Y'all can't spell Tezak. Tom and I know that. So it's okay because all of Tom's information is in the show notes for this episode, including his social handles. You can find him on Clubhouse on occasion, but also on your regular networks. And so you should reach out and network if you want to network with other people who have a different end goal in mind than just a check, because Tom is that kind of guy and that's who we want to hang out with. And so I'm very grateful for you coming on the show and telling kind of heartfelt story that's not got its own little crazy pieces, but the heart's at the center. And I love that about you and the way you do business. And thank you for bringing that into this podcast space today.
You bet. So it's such a pleasure to be with you, Leah. I'm just a huge fan of you. So thanks so much for having me part of your world.
Always glad to see you. And I'm glad that your daughter and wife are well. And I can't wait to see you in person at some point.
Me too. I love that.
All right, friends, make sure you subscribe for more. Give us 5 stars because you know that's your jam. Leave a happy comment in the thread for Tom and tell him how much you appreciate his heart too. And then we'll see you next time here on Crazy Shit in Real Estate.
Aloha.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, please just listening to one of the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out. I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.